Howdy, everybody, and welcome. We're here for episode 19 of Not Your Mother's Goose, the show where you'll surely relearn something you probably should have permanently forgotten many years ago. I'm Topher Goggin. On today's episode, we'll have first-round results and second-round pairings in our baddest-of-all-time tournament of Disney villains. We'll also dive into the tunes of Little Tommy Tucker, find out about David Copperfield's terrifying attempt to escape from Rapunzel's Tower, and have Dave fire up the jukebox while he's there with a classic from the American breed. Don't go anywhere. The first-round villain results, as selected by your votes, are coming up next. So don't worry, I'm not going to be cruel and make you wait. Let's get right to the results in our Tournament of Disney Villains. Now, if you weren't with us last time, we are running the definitive March Madness-style tourney to determine who is the baddest of all time, the number one overall Disney villain. You, the listeners, get to make the decisions with your votes. We actually had over 425 votes in the first round. Thank you all for the support. I really appreciate that. Please keep sending the ballots around, and I hope we'll find even more voters down the road in these future rounds. Now, the 3 through 6 seeds have battled it out in round one, and the winners are moving on to take on then the 1 and 2 seeds who had byes. And while our expert panel definitely is going to have some comments about your selections in a little bit, the seeding committee is patting itself on the back right now as all of the higher seeds were victorious in round one. We start in the old school region, where we actually had a couple of blowouts. Number 3 seed Captain Hook cleverly arrived with a pair of earplugs so we wouldn't have to listen to all the off with your head stuff from the Queen of Hearts. He jumped out to an early lead, cruised on to a 303-122 win. The road gets tougher now, though, as he's going to have to pack up and leave Neverland to visit the number 2 seed Evil Queen from Snow White, and I would recommend skipping the in-flight meal on the way there, Captain. His run was strong, but the top vote-getter of round one was actually number 4 seed in the old-school bracket, Cruella De Vil, who literally smoked out the Jungle Book's Shere Khan with 73.8% of the vote. Cruella moves on to the Evil Eight, where top seed Maleficent has been in the gym preparing all kinds of mischief, including possibly turning Cruella's hair into just one color. On the other side of the bracket, we've got a barn burner coming up in the 2-3 matchup in the New School region. Folks who thought that number 6 Hades from Hercules and his blue hair might set the Pride Lands ablaze and spring an upset on number 3 Scar, well, it wasn't to be. Scar also cracked the 70% mark in a 304-122 win in that one. Scar, though, gets the featured matchup in round two as he's going to head under the sea to tangle with Ursula. That should be a great one. The final matchup in round one was by far the most exciting, as number 4 Gaston and number 5 Randall from Monsters, Inc. were locked in a back-and-forth battle in the early going. Now, our panel, if you listened last time, thought that Randall's invisibility could pose a challenge to Gaston, especially coupled with the double vision from all of Gaston's drinking. And Randall actually led this matchup at 94 votes to 92 a few days in. LeFou must have rallied the townsfolk, though, and Gaston surged back, eventually pulling away by a final tally of 247 to 179, telling the press afterward, "I'm especially good at electorating." Well, what a guy that Gaston. Things don't get easier, though, as Gaston better hope the biceps also repel magic spells. He moves on to face the top seed in the New School bracket, and that is Jafar, so look forward to that one. Once again, here are those second round matchups. It's Maleficent versus Cruella, the Evil Queen versus Captain Hook, Jafar versus Gaston, and Ursula versus Scar. If you want to vote, just go to notyourmothersgoose.com. The bracket is right there at the top. You can click to go straight to a ballot. It'll take you less than a minute to fill it out. If you need any help with your analysis, our panel of experts will be back later in the show. They're, like I said, running a little hot after their early predictions didn't pan out so much. But they'll have plenty more of whatever is the opposite of insightful analysis coming up in just a little bit. Stay tuned. It's the Tournament of Disney Villains here on Not Your Mother's Goose. Little Tommy Tucker. In the world of fairy tale singers, it's hard to overlook Little Tommy Tucker. Even though he probably would have been Lil Tommy T with an L-I-L and an apostrophe in there somewhere had he risen to stardom in the early 2000s. Lil Tommy, as you know, sings for his supper, specifically for white bread and butter. Now, the idea of having a kid sing for food sounds like a rather sad situation, So I prefer to think of it more like he's gone on some very strange version of Star Search, where if you get 3¾ stars, Ed McMahon then gives you a sandwich along with the right to come back next week as champ. Kids, if you're new here, don't confuse Ed McMahon with Mr. McMahon from pro wrestling. Ed McMahon used to want to sell you life insurance during Wheel of Fortune and would occasionally send you a letter in the mail to tell you you might already have won $10 million. Regardless, though, of where exactly this supper singing is happening, or whether Tommy might want to branch out to sourdough just for fun, we do have a few more curious details thrown in. First of all, our narrator wants to know, how can he cut it without any knife? I mean, okay, it's a piece of bread. You would think just biting it might be an option. Though, admittedly, I do still remember the video that Mrs. Nichols showed us in home ec in sixth grade that suggested we should be cutting our French fries with a knife and eating them with a fork. Good thing that class didn't have a practical exam. I don't think I would have passed. But anyway, we go on from there to the much different question of how can he marry without any wife? Now, I understand that rhymes, but my friends at RhymeZone.com, a frequent stop working on Rapunzel's jukebox, would also remind us that there's a few other choices here. Life, strife, rife, mayonnaise, loosely. Seeing how I think most people picture Mr. Tucker as being about 6 years old, it seems like that might be a relevant consideration in the whole wife search around the playground. Regardless, I wish him luck, mainly because I want to see the meal choices on the RSVP for the reception. If anyone knows where our reporters should send their stories to get themselves some news awards, let me know, because I tell you, they get these scoops way before anybody else reports them. I doubt they'll be entering in any accuracy award categories. We'll leave those to someone else. But that's beside the point. Let's see what they've found this week. Dude from Operation files medical malpractice claim. CBS announces 2½ men in a tub. And speaking of CBS, we've got a big press release from the folks at the Columbia Broadcasting System today. David Copperfield plans new escape for TV special. David Copperfield, the suave magician, not the Charles Dickens character that nobody remembers, announced his latest signature TV stunt, a death-defying escape from being locked in Rapunzel's tower. Copperfield rose to fame by making the Statue of Liberty disappear, and previously walked through the Great Wall of China and escaped a burning raft going over Niagara Falls without using the conveniently attached jet ski. But his latest stunt could be his most difficult ever. With cameras rolling, Copperfield will be imprisoned in the same stairless tower that held Rapunzel for 17 years. The room will be thoroughly searched for anything that could aid an escape, including saws, drills, really pokey sporks, and any hair over 7 feet long. Copperfield noted that fairy tale tradition would give him 3 days to escape, but since that would make for rather boring TV for anyone other than C-SPAN viewers, he'll shoot for getting out in more like 2 minutes while CBS airs some Clorox commercials. Copperfield is, of course, not the first magician to attempt a fairy tale stunt. In 1924, Harry Houdini famously went where Mary could not by making an annoying lamb disappear during a show in Wisconsin. Additionally, eccentric illusionist David Blaine has indicated a desire to try napping for 21 years in hopes of overtaking the world record currently held by Rip Van Winkle. We'll head now to our own commercial, not for Clorox, and be back in a minute.
Hey, it's Jay and Laura from Celebrate Your Marriage and the Ultimate Date Night Tour, and we want you to join us for our next big event.
You know, most relationship seminars just want to sell you the fairy tale, literally. They bring in Aladdin and Jasmine, let you fly the magic carpet around the auditorium, but then send you home with no lamp and no genie. 2 weeks later, the prince has turned back into the beast and you're spending most of your time talking to the furniture.
Laura and I take a different approach to show you what really works. And let's just say, it's more nursery rhyme than fairy tale. That's right. It's time for Jay and Laura's Nursery Rhyme Nuptials.
Just to be clear, we are not recommending going pumpkin eater style and storing your spouse inside a pumpkin shell. No, we'll teach you the real world tips that have worked for everyone from Mama and Papa Bear to Old Mother Hubbard, and we'll show you what to do when your little teapot gets all steamed up. You'll also get to hear from our special guest, Jack Spratt himself, who will teach you firsthand about how he and his wife use their very different food preferences to get their platters so clean that nobody even has to do the dishes.
Let's be clear though, folks. Don't expect me to be the one that eats no fat.
If they've seen our cooking videos, I don't think anyone will be confused about that one.
So don't end up like Rip Van Winkle, claiming you took a 20-year nap when really you were just avoiding taking out the garbage. Whether you're in a new relationship or you're the farmer in the dell with a wife, child, and everything down to the cheese, we can enrich your partnership one hey diddle diddle at a time. Come learn with us, and we'll get you back to chasing each other around the mulberry bush, and not with a rolling pin. It's Nursery Rhyme Nuptials with Jay and Laura. See you there.
That was Jay and Laura LaFoon helping us out with their Nursery Rhyme Nuptials program. Thank you to both of them. If you'd like to check out their real programming, you can find them online at jayandlaura.com. Now we'll get back to the news. Sheriff Woody stops Lightning McQueen for speeding. Unable to blow down brick house, Big Bad Wolf contacts Kool-Aid Man for help. And straight from our courthouse bureau, Lazy Mary versus Lazy Susan legal battle rages on. The legal wrangling continues between Lazy Mary and Lazy Susan, now entering its third week, even though neither one of them has actually summoned the effort to go to the courthouse yet. The kerfuffle began when Lazy Mary worked up the initiative to call her lawyer and claim that she was the one who initially devised the idea for a rotating serving table so you wouldn't have to make the taxing effort of reaching 14 inches, or heaven forbid, asking someone to pass the cheese and crackers. Unfortunately, before Lazy Mary's ingenious device could make it to market, her neighbor, Lazy Susan, stole the idea, named it after herself, and began production. Lazy Susan, of course, could not be troubled to answer the phone and comment, but her son, Loudmouth Larry, told reporters, "It's not my mom's fault that Mary was too lazy to fill out the patent application." He went on to note that Lazy Susan was thrilled with sales of her serving turntables and planned to use the profits to hire some more servants, including one who would help put on her flip-flops if she decides to get out of bed. He said she would show up to court to defend Lazy Mary's lawsuit if she had to. Maybe. So it's time for a little more fun in the world of movie before and after. Little did I know how much I would enjoy these. Sadly, though, we are not going to be taking a look at Harold and Kumar Go to Snow White Castle. Instead, we'll take two animated favorites, mash them up end to end, and this time land at that new Disney classic, Sleeping Beauty and the Beast. Of course, the immediate dilemma that we face here is figuring out which Disney princess will be our heroine, whether it's going to be Snooze Master Aurora or Bookworm Belle. Now, I've always been a Belle fan myself, and there's the fact that it's a little hard to know how to write dialogue for Aurora other than snoring, but frankly, I see no reason not to just roll them together into a college student that constantly falls asleep in the library, and we'll call her Aurora Belle. So things get underway when a prince receives a knock on his door from Maleficent, and having his own sleeping movie mashup issues, asks her if she's the evil queen there to give him a poisoned apple. Maleficent loses it and turns the prince into one of the Geico cavemen, and then transforms all of his staff into pieces of old-school furniture that he doesn't know how to use. His chef is now an icebox, his personal assistant becomes a rotary phone, and his tailor, of course, turns into a talking spinning wheel. You can probably see where this is headed. Now, we'll need Aurora Belle's father to encounter some form of misfortune at the Beast's place, so let's just assume that that happens, and then we'll send Aurora Belle in on a rescue mission. When she gets there, she's charmed by the staff, especially this talking wheel named Taylor. That's T-A-Y-L-O-R, of course. And Taylor offers Aurora Belle to take her for a spin, which results in an unfortunate finger pricking, followed by Aurora Belle falling fast asleep. This is bad news for her, but it's definitely worse news for whichever staffer got turned into a bed, who now will have a lady lying on her for the next few years. With Aurora Belle sleeping, there isn't exactly a lot of falling in love going on around the castle, so the Beast is out of luck. Unfortunately, that kind of grinds our show to a halt, and our only way out of this plot dilemma is to bring in Gaston, which it's safe to say Aurora Belle would prefer the coma to any lip-locking with him. However, in an unexpected twist, Gaston lays on the charm, flexes the muscles, and it works. On Maleficent. Think about it, they could work together, they've pretty much got the same eyebrows already. Ms. Cruelty falls head over heels in love, which, thanks to one of those convenient Disney, hey, any kind of true love counts clauses, breaks the curse, saves Aurorabelle, and saves the prince. Meanwhile, Mally and Gaston become the new power couple of evil, giving birth to the most vile Disney villain ever, Maleficent of the Magic Biceps. Look for Aurorabelle to fight him off in the sequel. Time now to return to the real Disney movies and our tournament of villains, our quest to pick the baddest of all time. Though I must admit that if Maleficent from Sleeping Beauty and the Beast was in here, that's just game over, we could all go home. Instead, though, we'll stick with Maleficent and Gaston, both of whom have made it to the Evil Eight. Remember that your first round votes gave easy wins to Cruella de Vil over Shere Khan, Captain Hook over the Queen of Hearts, and Scar over Hades, and that Gaston recorded a thrilling come-from-behind victory against Randall from Monsters, Inc. Our expert panel is back now to offer their thoughts, including a few complaints on behalf of Randall and Hades, and to break down the second round action. Remember, you can go to notyourmothersgoose.com to vote, as Captain Hook takes on the number 2 seed Evil Queen in the old school bracket, Cruella meets number 1 Maleficent, and over on the new school side, Gaston squares off against number 1 Jafar, and Scar tries to take a bite out of number 2 Ursula. Now, if you're unsure about any of those votes, surely the panel will just confuse you even more. So let's bring them on. All right. Well, we'd like to welcome back our expert panel after first round voting is complete in the Tournament of Villains. Tell us your thoughts about the first round. Any particular surprises, any places where you disagree with how the voters came out?
This Hades matchup is absolutely out of control. I mean, did they remember? He recruited the Titans. He's got Pain and Panic. He's got every adult's worst nightmare on his side. How did he lose?
Well, let's keep in mind that Scar did kill his own brother.
Well, but that's exactly the problem. Hades doesn't care about anyone, so who's Scar going to go after? Hades has no vulnerabilities.
Scar now gets really the premier battle of the second round, taking on Ursula.
We really need to talk about, where is this matchup going down? Do we have any information on the setting? Water base, land base? It's really going to be the deciding factor.
Ursula is the 2 seed, so she should have the home court. So I think this is an undersea battle.
Excellent. Well, she's going to do just fine then.
And if folks recognize, we do have a new voice on this expert panel. We had to go to someone with theater experience. And how does that play into your analysis, new panel member?
I tell you what, it's all about showmanship. Ursula has definitely come to own the game. She's got the makeup, she's got the costume, she's got the attitude, my friend. What more can you say?
Well, and don't underestimate the importance of body language. Anybody out there on the other side of this one, anybody think Scar's even got a chance?
Underwater? Absolutely not.
Does Scar have access to a boat to stab her with? I mean, that's his only option, really.
Well, that's a good point. And I guess that depends on what, does Scar have time to do much scouting? Having been busy in that first round matchup, one assumes that Ursula's been in the war room getting ready. Let's move on and take a look at a couple of our other matchups. Gaston moves on in a tight battle against Randall Boggs. That was one that was up and down the whole way through. Randall had the lead. Gaston surged late.
I mean, I think the big flaw here is that Randall was just fundamentally redeemable, where Gaston is not. And so the evil was just not there deep down to his core.
I don't think Randall had enough friends to petition to vote for him. Gaston knows a lot of people. Bribe them with beer, they're going to come out to the polls.
Yeah,
with a lot of these people, their sidekicks play a huge role. And I do think Randall is much more of a loner.
LeFou is one of the worst sidekicks, though, in all of Disney.
I mean, worst sidekicks, best name. True. And you get points for that.
I think Gaston's going to take away the wrong lessons from that first round matchup and is going to be extremely overconfident going up against Jafar.
They are two of the most pompous villains.
Maybe that tight matchup will serve him well. You get battle hardened by winning a close one, and no matter how strong he already is, could get stronger.
Does he have momentum after rallying late in that game? I mean, he's going in the right direction.
That's right. The best way to get momentum is to fall way behind and barely squeak it out.
Also, you talk about Gaston's overconfidence, but let's think about where Jafar lost during the regular season. That's Aladdin taking him down when Jafar decided to become a genie and got trapped in the lamp. Could he be fallen by the same type of mistake here?
I'm actually thinking that it could be interesting to have a separate competition of of these characters fighting as they were at the end of the Disney movie.
Right.
Gaston skewered at the bottom of a castle against Jafar in a lamp.
And then you've got Ursula as a weed. Yes. And Scar at the bottom of a ravine. So yes, that would be a
mild ashes.
Not a lot of movement in those matchups.
Well, let's jump over to the old school side of the bracket. Your number one vote getter in round one was Cruella De Vil. She just smoked out Shere Khan, but now picks up a tough one against Maleficent. What does Cruella do to try to pull another one?
She's got no shot. Absolutely no shot against Maleficent.
Oh, see, I completely disagree. I feel like we've learned so much more about Cruella. We really know that this woman can show up with some serious style, and she knows what she's doing.
She's just a mean lady who hates animals. And we know that Maleficent has very strong feelings about protecting the forest creatures. So I think she's going to have extra motivation to go against Cruella. Mm-hmm.
Cruella De Vil might be the biggest jerk on the whole thing. I mean, if somebody wants to skin cute little puppies to wear them just for vanity.
I think she's so also the most relatable jerk because she's also just a mean boss.
Yeah, she's just a jerk.
I'm not arguing that she doesn't have damage.
While we're on the subject of that Cruella win, I know that there was some concern early on that Shere Khan didn't belong in this tournament. We saw all the higher seeds win in the first round. Is that a sign that the committee got it right? We did hear from some of the voters, a lot of people in support of Claude Frollo should have snuck in. I've gone back and watched some of the game film, and I understand where they're coming from. Should he have been in there? And if so, suppose that he had come in for the Queen of Hearts, would he have been able to take out Captain Hook?
No doubt.
Absolutely.
Who? Claude Rollo?
Rollo!
Yeah.
It's from The Hunchback of Notre
Dame. Oh, jeez, I haven't seen
he
that
is
one.
Very evil and cruel.
I think he would have gone the way of Hades.
I think he would have done well in any of these matchups where he did not have to face a female villain, because I think we all know that he would have catastrophically underestimated any female opponent.
You make a point, a good point there. Captain Hook obviously got the very easy win in the first round against the Queen of Hearts, who really didn't put up much of a fight. I think she must just be going back to croquet lessons. But the captain now moves on and gets the evil queen. So it's a pair of queens for Captain Hook. But this one, I think, brings a little bit more to the table than the Queen of Hearts.
Got to agree. I think this queen is a much more formidable opponent.
What did the dog think there? I heard the collar jangling. Was that a vote in favor of the queen?
I believe so.
I do think the evil queen takes with her the benefit of turning into a witch, potentially having additional witch powers. There's things here that I think have a lot of possibility in regards to her opponent. I'm just not sure what else is there.
Not a lot of depth on that bench.
I don't think there's a lot going on upstairs in Captain Hook, and most of the evil queen's deviance is going to be messing with his intellect. So I don't think he has much of a chance.
All right, so you got the queen going on there. Okay, quick lightning round as we go around. We're down to the evil eight. Who is your overall favorite to take the title at this point? Looking at the bracket, who's got that easiest path to the finals?
I think you're going to see Maleficent versus Ursula.
Got to go Maleficent. She can turn into a dragon.
Yeah, I mean, if Jafar wins and plays Ursula, Jafar will then have home court advantage. So Ursula's going to be competing in the desert. Yeah, that's not going to go very well for her.
That could get you a Jafar versus Maleficent battle of the one seeds in the finals.
Oh, man. I'd like to see that movie.
Yeah, let's start pitching these. Do we know any exhibits?
Like Predator versus Alien, Maleficent versus Jafar. My one argument against Maleficent is just that dragon was pretty easily defeated by a handsome prince with a sword. It didn't take any type of magic to defeat her.
I'm pulling for Cruella all the way. She doesn't need magic to pull out a win, to pull out some kind of evil plan. I think she's going to be the one to watch.
Well, there you have it. Expert analysis, and on we go with the Evil Eight. We're nearly up to an Evil Eight worth of panelists here, as we've had a toddler wander through, we've had a dog, and clearly this is spot-on analysis that will very much help the voters as they proceed to the next round. Thank you again to our expert Crook Council for their astute evaluation of the second round. If that didn't clear everything up for you, well, anyway. Don't wait to get your votes in for the Evil Eight. You can just go to notyourmothersgoose.com, look for the bracket, it's right at the top. You'll be able to lock in your selections in less than a minute. Plus, you can sign up for the Goose Droppings list to get instant access for all the future ballots. We will announce the Foul Four on our next show as we close in on an overall winner. It's the baddest of all time Tournament of Villains here on Not Your Mother's Goose. We're closing in on the end of today's show, so we better take our weekly trip to the wonderful world of Rapunzel's Jukebox. Now, if you open up your memory bank, you may recall the 1967 tune that goes, "Bend me, shape me, any way you want me," by the one-hit wonders The American Breed. Well, it's only a small change to the words "bend me, shape me" to "get, dress me, drape me," and with that, our own Andrew Mitchell turns into the emperor, donning his new clothes. So, starting off as a very confident emperor, and ending more than a touch on the sheepish side, here comes Andrew Mitchell with "Dress Me, Drape Me" on Rapunzel's Jukebox.
I could use some fashion advice, and baby, I know it. But you say this fabric you use, you don't even sew it. I'll pay you all of my gold. They're out there standing in line for my parade. I gotta look fine. Dress me, drape me, time to take a jaunty. Man, this stuff's comfy, it's so light. Clothe me, cape me, no one's gonna taunt me. Frostbite be darned, I'll be looking fly. If you cannot see my new duds, it means you're a dummy. But just because you don't have my brains, no need to feel crummy. They'll probably laugh, I don't care, 'cause I got nothing to hide. Hang it all loose, it's time to go stride. Dress me, drape me, now it's time to flaunt me. Now that I'm looking, this ain't right. Clothe me, cape me, uh-oh, this might haunt me. Dunces can't see it, but neither can I. Dress me, drape me, run off nonchalantly. Kid, keep your mouth shut, help my plight. Clothe me, cape me, find a restaurant. See, no shirt, no shoes, no service tonight. Yeah, dress me.
It's Andrew Mitchell as the Emperor running for cover here on Rapunzel's Jukebox on Not Your Mother's Goose. We've actually got a new Rapunzel's Jukebox page on notyourmothersgoose.com that I hope you'll check out. Fun info on there about Andrew, his band The Othership, Tony D'Amico. Plus, you can listen to some of the old songs, and there's links to the other previous episodes and their songs. Of course, the other reason to visit notyourmothersgoose.com right now is to access the second round ballot in the Tournament of Disney Villains. The whole process is very simple. You'll be done, have your votes cast in less than a minute. Remember that the buys are done, so the heavy hitters are into the action. The current matchups for this round are Cruella de Vil versus Maleficent, Captain Hook versus the Evil Queen, Gaston versus Jafar, and I think my personal favorite, Scar versus Ursula. I truly have no idea what's going to happen now that we're into this round, and that makes me very excited that I'm the one that has the little refresh button where I can keep track of the results as they go along. That brings us to the end of the road for today, but do come back next time for more villains voting. We'll also take a visit to Willy Wonka's chocolate factory and check out news of Curious George's arrest for chasing weasels around a mulberry bush. Until then, thanks for listening. I'm Topher Goggin. The goose is loose. I'll talk to you soon with more on Not Your Mother's Goose.